The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. Alyssa Master Monaco is sick, but she will be joining us in just a bit. Okay, so Taylor Swift fans have proven that they're capable of nearly superhuman hyperfixation on details. It's how we kind of know publicly what's coming next from Taylor without her having to even say anything. I think that would make them great detectives. So here's a prompt to get you thinking this week. If Taylor Swift fans were put in charge of the FBI, what is the first unsolved crime they'd solve? Hysteria@crooked.com. Let us know. Okay, we have a really fun show today. We're going to talk about news, talk about Nikki Haley. She's still got the juice to carry on past New Hampshire. We'll see. We're going to talk a little bit about more of Trump's legal woes, and we're going to give you an update on trans-related laws across the country and some Supreme Court moves on the issue. And then we've got a panel. We have Megan Gailey and Dana Schwartz joining us to talk about the concept of home wrecking, why women get blamed for breaking up marriages when men are equally involved, and whether or not we have a right to call quote-unquote home wrecking women not a girl's girl. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who hated the Iowa caucus before it was cool. Alyssa, when was the first time you realized you hated the Iowa caucus?
Erin, in all of the campaigns dating back 20 years at this point, I have never been to the Iowa caucus.
Congratulations.
I have always been the nut who's like, you know what? I should go to New Hampshire. But we're past that now. On to the great Northeast.
Yeah. We are past that onto the great Northeast. I gotta say, there is a part of me, and I think there's a part of a lot of people listening who, you know, once the Iowa caucuses are done, they're like, good. I don't need to think about Iowa anymore. And I gotta say, it's gone downhill over the course of my lifetime in Iowa as a state.
It has. This is very boring. Well, also, the Republican caucus is very boring. They come in, talk, write their name on a paper, and they're done. There's no, like, you know, like with the Democrats, or at least the old way the Democrats did it, was like you go in, you vote, your person doesn't hit the threshold, so you toss your votes to someone else. It's much more animated and dynamic.
Yeah, it's like the New York City mayoral race, but
exactly.
With real people. I mean, here's the thing, though. I know I'm being flippant about Iowa, and Iowans, before you send us an angry email, hysteria@crooked.com, before you send us an angry email, I just want to say that you don't actually get to forget about Iowa until 4 years from now. You don't.
Right.
Because it is going to be a matter of weeks before that state's wackadoodle Republican-controlled state government tries to pass something like overturning the 14th Amendment or
that
sending troops to Mexico unilaterally or like invading Illinois. Iowa's state government is not in a great spot right now. And the way that crazy laws become our problem, they go from small red states that you really have no reason to visit unless you're a very gifted writer that gets into the writing workshop. They go from problems within that state to your problem because there is a conservative legal strategy to introduce crazy laws in little states, get them appealed up to the Supreme Court, get the Supreme Court to say, actually, this crazy law is fine, and then it's your problem. So we got to pay attention. If you are an Iowan, you got to pay attention to your state government. If you're not an Iowan, you got to keep an eye on what's going on in Iowa because it might become your problem.
And with that.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry. Nikki Haley. Let's talk about Nikki Haley because we might not have very much more time to talk about Nikki Haley.
Nikki girl.
Nikki Haley came in third in the Iowa caucuses on Monday. She was neck and neck with second place Ron DeSantis and a long, long way behind Donald Trump, who was the winner. Both DeSantis and Haley are claiming that they're trouncing at the golf shoes of Trump. is good, actually. Both of them are saying, you know, second and third place actually is a little bit like winning. But it should also be noted that due to inclement weather, something like 14% of Iowa Republicans voted in the caucuses, which means that Donald Trump got about 7% of Iowa Republicans. And from that, we are extrapolating that Donald Trump has a lot of momentum.
A lot of support.
A lot of support. So, you know, next week we're going to be talking about America's fourth whitest state, New Hampshire. We're going to be moving up from Iowa, America's eighth whitest state. And these two states, for some reason, still determine the direction that we have decided the election is going. But let's talk about Nikki Haley. Haley actually has a shot to win in New Hampshire, and that would make her the first Republican woman to win a state-level primary. Alyssa, does that matter?
Sure. It's great, right? I mean, because, well, Republicans care about women so much, I'm sure they're going to put her on a coin or a dollar bill or something at some point. no, I mean, you know, I think it's good. It's better than them never having a woman win a primary. Yeah. So, yay, Nikki. If she actually wins.
Yeah, I know. Here's something that sort of is like irksome is the way that, and this has always been bothersome to me because it doesn't make any sense just like as a concept. Momentum, the idea of momentum.
Momentum's a lie.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
Okay. To me, a layperson who has a podcast with her dear friend, momentum is something that was devised by cable news back in 2004. That's like people believe if people are saying she's got momentum, it makes it more exciting. Like right now, Donald Trump becoming the nominee is essentially a fait accompli. Like it's going to be really fucking hard for anyone to stop him. But by saying, but Nikki's got momentum, well, people are going to tune into New Hampshire. They're going to see what's going on. It might drive voter turnout because people like, you know, if people think that the delta between she and Trump is so big that, you know, why bother going out? They don't want that. So like momentum, because they want to build the story. I mean, Aaron, let us just rewind to 2004. John Kerry cruising along, doing great. All of a sudden, Howard Dean has momentum. John Kerry dead in the water going into Iowa. And then what happens? All that momentum, in air quotes, that Howard Dean had in theory was undone by one scream when he was listing a bunch of states and he was like, ah, and that killed his momentum. How can momentum be real if that can kill momentum?
Yeah. Is it a sound? Is it a sound that a sound can kill? I think, you know, it sort of reminds me of that. You bring up a good point that the media's best interests are served by making people think that they need to keep tuning into the media.
By there being a race.
Exactly. And I think that's why we hear a lot of horse race politics, a lot of stuff that is sort of kind of political astrology as we, and not to like insult astrology here, but something that is sort of like taking a look at a bunch of factors that may or may not have bearing on the future and trying to predict the future. And I also think it reminds me a little bit of, you know, when you're watching a football game and it's like the end of the third quarter. And the score, let's say it's like the Packer-Cowboy game.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and like the Packers are up so much that there is no way that the Cowboys are going to win. And there gets to a point where the announcers start to sound a little bored, you know?
100%. Aaron, this is the perfect analogy for political momentum.
Yes, exactly. We're at the point where there is no longer a case to be made, I think, for pundits to say like, okay, well, you know, this could happen. It becomes a little bit more and more transparently an attempt to keep people tuning in when it's just like, I don't know. I guess people want to make their jobs more interesting.
I mean, I would too. I would, if this, look, For us, it is obviously more interesting if there's an actual race, because if there is an actual race, then people have to talk about actual policies and you have to be actually compared.
Right.
But right now, I mean, I gotta say, Nikki, baller move, being like, I'll debate Trump, but not DeSantis. I already did it. I mean, I'm like, all right. That is the first time I've been like, all right, let's see where this goes. Mm-hmm. I was very interested. I didn't think Trump would debate her, but I did think it was a play and it worked.
It was a savvy move. Yeah, Nikki Haley has refused to do any more Republican debates unless Trump participates. And as a result, the debate that was supposed to take place this Thursday, the 18th, is no longer going to happen. Yeah. Nobody wants to listen to Ron DeSantis talk for an hour and a half.
I mean, I think we can all agree DeSanctimonious is, in fact, the correct nickname.
Yeah. By the way, I was listening to NPR the other morning, and they started pronouncing it Ron DeSantis, which they weren't doing before.
Because they've become confused, because they've heard DeSanctimonious too many times.
No, I think it's because it sounds like Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis, our drag
Rhonda.
Queen name.
Rhonda.
Yeah, Ron DeSantis. So unless they take a moment to pause and say Ron DeSantis, it sounds like they're calling him Ron DeSantis. Which,
that's perfect.
I know.
You're
I mean,
right.
Yeah.
I had not thought about that, but it does sound like Ron DeSantis.
Yeah. okay, and that's how Donald Trump says it, so it's extra funny. So I just kind of want to talk a little bit about the way that Nikki Haley has run her campaign and the way that her fellow Republican candidates have kind of handled her. Like, there's definitely been some sexism, and I hate to sort of be like, wee-oo, sexism, you know, and run to the defense of a person who, if given the opportunity, would gladly sign away the rights of millions
totally.
Of women. But I do hate Ron DeSantis. And I think that he deserves to be called out when he is doing some sexism. DeSantis's allies and spokespeople and people who kind of are in the media talking for him have compared her to Nancy Pelosi and
like,
Hillary
okay.
Clinton.
Okay.
I mean, but what's similar, Ron? What do they have in common? What's
are
similar?
They people who get mammograms.
I mean, if Nikki Haley got a mammogram and announced that she gets mammograms and everybody should get mammograms, I would find that a very respectable move.
I agree with that.
But I think, honestly, woman like other woman is like a silly, stupid, sexist thing. But it also brings up the fact that Nikki Haley is a Republican woman. She has laid down her lot with people who don't really think that she's fully a human being because she's a woman.
And she's willing to maybe capitulate. She's willing to yield a little bit of that just to be able to try to do this.
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. I think that there is an undercurrent among conservative women who believe that if they align themselves with conservative men and want conservative men to have power, then they will be protected from the things that conservative men do to other women. So if they align themselves, but they're not. They're not. The second that you're an inconvenience to them, the second that you stand in between them and something that they want, they will absolutely do to you what they would do to any woman who is as far outside of their ideal compliant woman that you
without
can imagine.
Question.
Without
I mean,
question.
Donald Trump has gone from Nikki Haley, so loyal, she was at the UN, did so much, to she's a bad negotiator, she begged for the job, she's unreliable, she's incompetent. So, like, girl, what do you think everyone else is going to do to you when this is over? Except Ron DeSantis, though, too. I mean, like, I'm not saying Trump is subtle. He's the opposite. But Ron DeSantis is the essence of, like, a guy who preps for a debate and is just trying to make fetch happen. Like, when I was listening to the debate last week or earlier this week, whenever the fuck it was, and he just kept saying, the pastel colors of Nikki Haley, we need bold colors. We need bold colors. Nikki Haley's all pastel colors. And I was like, oh, my God, that's the best you can do?
Also, what? Grow up, you fucking baby. If you're a man who can't handle pastel colors, like, or
the pale
anything.
Pastels is what he kept saying.
I bet he's a person who won't eat yogurt unless it comes in black packaging and it's called, like, dick cream or something like that. You know,
like I was going to say Dan and Fruit on the Bottom, but okay.
No. I mean, but this is something that we, that, you know, every once in a while you go to the grocery store or you see a product marketed and you're like, why is this marketed for men in such an ugly, weird, clunky way? Why can't men just take the thing, like Diet Coke?
Why can't men just make it normal?
No, we got to put in a black can, Coke Zero. No, it's Diet Coke with a different type of artificial sweetener that is being marketed to men because men don't want to do things that women like to do because it, they are afraid that somehow breaching the like hard
they're
fast
not
lines.
Dudes anymore.
Yeah, they're gay now. Like it's just it's so stupid. But
he's,
you know,
exhausting.
Men like Ron DeSantis are literally why there has to be separate men's and women's body wash. Because it's
exactly.
Like, it's like
when really everyone smelling like eucalyptus is just fine.
It's absolutely just not like who cares? You're not gonna grow a vagina by using soap that is not scented like Axe body spray.
Oh,
you're
so
not gonna
gross.
Grow a vagina by having a female president. And that's the thing though. I think that undercurrent. I'm not going to say that, like, oh, yeah, all progressive and liberal men are not sexist, which totally, totally, totally false. You and I know very well.
There.
Not whole other thing. But the sort of blatant, fragile masculinity, I cannot do anything girly or it threatens my manhood, that runs much more strongly in conservative circles. And so I think that, you know, there's been some chatter. We've joked around while crying about the possibility that the first female president in the U.S. could be a woman, like a Margaret Thatcher type figure, which I think is altogether possible. But I also think that there's a pretty high hurdle for her, for Nikki Haley, or for any Republican woman in the future to clear. And that is the fact that undergirding American conservatism now more than ever is an anti-woman patriarchal belief that women should not be in charge of things and, in fact, should not even be able to control their own lives. So somehow if a woman is able to navigate the mental gymnastics necessary for millions of people to just give her power, even though no other women deserve power, I guess I will be impressed by that, but stranger things have happened.
Well, right, because it's like, really, for all intents and purposes, if there were to be a Republican woman who, in theory, should be the first Republican president, Liz Cheney.
The first female president would
first,
be, yeah.
Right? If that's how it were to shake out. But they couldn't, the Republicans couldn't handle her. They were like, she's too much. She's just too much. And so, you know,
but that's,
here we are.
It's, I think that the only model or the most viable model here would be like the Phyllis Schlafly model, a woman who her full-time job was traveling around the country talking about how women should stay home with their kids while someone else stayed home with her kids.
When she really was doing all this because all she wanted was a job at the Department of Defense.
Whoa, that's not very girly. That's going to, you know what? A girl works at the Department of Defense, that's going to be, they're going to collect the dicks day one. Put them in a big basket of dicks right at the door of the Department of Defense. No, you can't have chicks working at the Department of Defense. Are you kidding, Phyllis?
And so she never did.
Can I just say, I'm glad, let me finish this sentence before you react. I'm glad that Phyllis Schlafly died believing that Hillary Clinton would be president. She died in like June 2016 or July 2016. I think that when she died, she believed that Hillary Clinton was going to be the president.
I think you're right.
I love that for her.
That is dark, but also true.
I mean, that's the least that she deserved after she almost single-handedly torpedoed the Equal Rights Amendment. She sucked. She sucked. Let's talk about the E. Jean Carroll trial. Is there anything new to
talk
about,
Alyssa? Speaking of
sucking. Yeah.
Oh, Aaron, as you know, and listeners can probably tell, I am not feeling my best today. I'm a little congested.
And, you got the double COVID.
I got the COVID. And
it's happening to everybody now.
It's around, people. Do not sleep on it. It is not I am feeling struck pretty hard, but because
I can't believe you're here today. I can't believe you're here today.
I would never leave you.
This is like seriously commitment.
You see, I just got it yesterday. I just started feeling badly yesterday. But you did the show when you were like 3 days into COVID. You weren't great. This is just what we do.
That's true. This is what we do.
This is what we do.
Our brains are Swiss cheese.
And this is what we do.
We are here talking about very important topics.
Very important. And I couldn't sleep. And so I have been up watching the E. Jean Carroll trial today. As we record here on Wednesday, E. Jean Carroll has been on the stand for hours testifying against Donald Trump. Donald Trump attended the defamation trial yesterday in New York. He sat about 10 feet away from E. Jean. He was found responsible for sexually abusing her in the 90s in a civil trial. Trump was in the courtroom for jury selection yesterday, but left right before opening statements began to go to a campaign rally in New Hampshire. Make no mistake, these are nothing but campaign events for him. He knows that he will be on TV, Aaron. That is what this is. A lot of cable networks are not carrying him, and so he's using all these trials, up and down the East Coast, to get on TV and have people see him, to portray himself as a victim. Now, he and E. Jean had not been in the same room for decades, so I personally have a stomach ache for her. I could not imagine how hard it was for her to have to be in the room with him after all these years. He was not present when her attorney, Sean Crowley, told the jury how Trump had upended E. Jean's life, that they needed to return a verdict large enough to make him stop targeting her. E. Jean testified that he's robbed her of any sense of safety or security, that he has shattered her reputation. As president, he used the world's largest bully pulpit to target her, and now he's claiming she's clearly good at public relations and is benefiting. He believes she is benefiting, Aaron, from this courtroom fiasco.
You know, first of all, E. Jean Carroll is I kind of love her style
brave
of writing.
Bitch.
Yeah, but I also love her as a writer.
Totally.
It's like very, I don't want to say like throwbacky in a condescending way, but it's sort of like harkens back to this kind of like sassy 90s style writing. Not Sassy Magazine, but like, you know, women's magazines in the 90s that had a sort of like edge and attitude to them. Her Substack is a lot of fun. And she's, I think, really tough. The fact that she's gone through all of this and that she filed a second lawsuit after she won in the first one and is like, okay, it reminds me of that scene at the end of or during Breakfast Club when Judd Nelson's character keeps shouting and the principal keeps increasing his detention.
Yeah.
That's
totally
sort of legally
another
what is
great analogy.
That's like legally what is happening to Donald Trump right now. Yeah. But, you know, maybe we'll get a cool Breakfast Club style movie out of it.
One thing that's either later today or tomorrow, depending on how the court case goes, E. Jean Carroll will be cross-examined by Trump's attorneys, which you can only imagine how horrible that is for her. But we can hope that they go way too far, as they always do, and end up painting her as highly credible and that she gets the additional $10 million in compensatory and punitive damages that she is seeking.
So I have a question. Which lawyers are these? Is this the glass gargler, or are the lawyers running around?
Like, you ask that because I actually tried figuring that out and could not get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, I mean, he's got such a vast legal team. I wonder if.
But does he? Like,
I mean,
that's
he has to. He's got stuff going on in Georgia. He's got stuff going on in D.C. He's got two things going on in New York right now. It's like you can't. I mean, if he does not have separate lawyers on every trial, he's probably racking up a lot of like they're probably racking up airline status flying in between all the court.
Well, because you know he's not going to pay them, so it's not like they're getting rich off of this.
Yeah, that's true. I wonder what's in it for them. Maybe they've all committed crimes and he's promised to pardon them if he becomes president again.
We just got a live update from Caroline, who is getting updates from the trial. And just moments ago, the judge asked Trump to keep his voice down when conferring with his lawyers in front of the jury.
Oh, my God.
What a menace to society.
Oh, my God.
But I'm not laughing because he could reasonably be president. And so, you know.
Update number two. Trump is reacting physically and loudly to Carroll's testimony. God. Honestly, it sounds like the Salem witch trials when the like girls were screaming when, you know, Goody Proctor or whatever was like on the stand.
Yeah.
He just, what a baby. Do we want somebody that's that emotionally dysregulated as president?
No, he really cannot. He cannot be trusted. He's too emotional.
I think it's, he is way too emotional and dysregulated. I'm going to use therapy speak.
He's dysregulated. It's a great word.
Yeah. He's emotionally dysregulated, but that is not what you want in a leader. It's not what you want in somebody that you sit next to on an airplane. It's not what you want in a person.
In any profession.
No, a person that's ahead of you picking up a prescription at CVS. You don't want, he's just not fit for society. In general.
Yeah.
Gross. Okay. So, finally, rounding up news today. It's been a minute since we've done a deeper dive into the state of trans rights in the U.S. So there's like attempts to curtail them, there's attempts to defend them, and where both efforts stand in the cold molasses that is our court system. So a lot of the states that we're about to talk about are kind of the usual suspects when it comes to opposing bodily autonomy. A lot of places that have anti-trans laws working their way through the system are also first in line to restrict access to health care for women, reproductive health care. It is a through line controlling the bodies of people who the patriarchy believes should be controlled. Mm-hmm. So it's important to remember that state-level fuckery, like we said earlier in the show, is what gets escalated through the courts to the Supreme Court. So that's why we have to pay attention to these things, even though it is unpleasant. Okay. So this week, the Missouri legislature is hearing 7 anti-trans bills that attempt to legalize bathroom bans and healthcare discrimination. I just want to point out the things that people in Missouri are not taking care of. There's a public education crisis in that state.
Yep.
And lawmakers are not doing jack shit to address that.
No, but there are 7 anti-trans bills.
7 anti-trans bills, and several of them relate to bathroom bans. So they're not really concerned with, like, keeping schools open and functional 5 days a week, but they are making sure that if the schools are not condemned buildings, trans kids cannot use the bathrooms of their gender.
Right.
It is ridiculous. Similarly, last week, West Virginia introduced 9 new anti-trans bills, one of which would prevent gender-affirming care access until the age of 21. And to the age of 21, after people are legal adults.
And can drink.
And can go, like, be in the army.
Whatever. Exactly. You could have been in the army for years.
You can sacrifice your body to the United States of America, but you cannot make a decision about your body when it comes to—
Also, maybe they should focus on the opioid crisis.
No, West Virginia is famously one of the states with the fewest problems. Famously. Oh, Alyssa is holding a cat like a child.
He's a chunky baby. He's a chunky baby. He's missed hysteria. He had to come. He came in early today.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, he's got opinions on the problems in West Virginia.
He does. He's mad.
He's pretty mad about it. I mean, this is something that we've talked about a lot, but every state that is trying this fuckery is using finite and precious time to focus on this rather than real problems, okay? So they're not fixing any. They're not helping you. They're not doing anything for anybody.
There's nothing.
They're showboating.
Nothing of value.
Nothing of value. They're auditioning for unpaid hits on Fox News because their lives are so empty, so empty. And they were raised with not enough attention or too much attention.
Clearly.
And they're making it all of our problems now. It is truly egregious. And also, like, come on, man. Like, you're picking on the most disenfranchised group, possibly, in the U.S.
Right. Like, just let people be.
Leave
people alone. Why does it
hurt
you
alone.
So much?
Leave
Why
people
does it
alone.
Hurt you personally so much, lawmakers who should be doing other things, to let people just be?
My God. The other day, I was in a public park in L.A., and I was going to go use the women's bathroom. And, you know, public restrooms in public parks can sometimes be a little bit sketchy.
Yeah.
And I was about to go into the women's room, and I was like, I don't know, is this going to be safe? And then I had this thought about, like, how lawmakers have invented this scenario where if they allow trans people to use the bathrooms that match their gender identity, men will hide in the women's bathroom and attack, but
when
not otherwise.
Hide anyway.
Not otherwise. I was just like, look, there is no psycho in the city of Los Angeles that would see a sign that's like, oh, wait, I can't go into that bathroom and wait and attack
people. I want to commit murder, but I shouldn't go in that
bathroom. I'm going to follow the signs. What? The statute says that I must go into the bathroom that matches my gender assigned, or my gender assigned at birth. So I'm sorry, ladies. Going to have to attack you from these bushes instead of the bathroom. It's
dumb.
It's so dumb. It makes me feel like I've been breathing too quickly, like lightheaded. Oh, it is, yes, like a lightheaded stupid. And then in Ohio, some trans candidates are trying to run for office, but they're getting disqualified or challenged because there's this rusty, rickety old law from the 1920s that requires candidates to include any name changes on petitions that would get them on the ballot. So this
was not communicated
to candidates, and sort of like cruel to trans people to force them to use their dead name on applications to run for public office. Like, why is that relevant?
It's the cruelty is the point.
The cruelty is the point. I think I can see a world in which it would be relevant if somebody changed their name after like a criminal conviction. And you want, like—
Yeah, you want to start life fresh.
Right, but, like, you also want to know that about your elected officials. But I think that that could be specifically written into the law. Like, if you have a—if you changed your name for, you know, after—
Crimes.
Yeah, for crimes. Maybe you shouldn't be running for office at all. I don't know. I'm just spitballing laws here. And they seem more well thought out than a lot of laws in the states of West Virginia.
Yes.
And Missouri. Let's move on to something worthy of, like, tepid applause.
Okay.
The Supreme Court has dodged having to make a federal-wide decision about bathroom bans.
Thank God.
Yeah. So there is a school district in Indiana that had attempted to force its students to use bathrooms that matched their sex assigned at birth.
Right.
So trans students weren't allowed to use a bathroom that matched their current gender expression. They were sued. A lower court said that actually the school can't do that. And the Supreme Court decided to not hear the case, which means the lower court ruling stands, which means that that ban can't be enforced, which I think is good.
We'll take it.
We'll take it. I mean, it's like non-action by the Supreme Court, but the standards—
But it's good. It's a lot of these things, it's like, please, just—
Yeah. The expectations just, are so low that it's like—
I know.
Honestly— Clarence Thomas not coming out and being like, no more women talking would like is like, a, oh, OK, wow, that's actually great. Thanks, guys. A couple of little heartwarming stories. Pedro Pascal, America's boyfriend, I would think right now.
He's cute.
Everybody loves him. Everybody loves a Pedro Pascal. I don't want to hear any bad stories about him.
Nope. Keep them to yourself if you have them. We don't want them.
For the next, like, month, I just want to hold him in my heart as, like, just this wonderful celebrity who does nice things and is really good at his job. He brought his trans sister to the Emmys, and they looked super adorable. Plus, Yosha Iglesias is the first out trans woman to become an international chess master.
Killing it.
That's fun. Queen's Gambit season 2.
Can you play chess?
I can. Should I is the operative question. And the answer is no.
One of those things I've been thinking of taking up.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating. It requires a lot of, like, catastrophizing. Actually, if you're a person who's really good at catastrophizing, you would be good at chess because you have to think about all the different ways that things can go wrong. That's chess. Think about all the different ways that things can go wrong.
Here's the thing. I am good at that, but I actually don't think I should tap into that side of myself.
Yeah, it might cause you a little bit of anxiety. but it is like a nice, you know, if you play with somebody whose energy matches yours and you're sort of like nobody's getting too worked up about it, it can be fun.
Okay.
Yeah, also there's something really satisfying about like moving the pieces. Like on a marble.
That's what is interesting me in all this. I'm like, oh, maybe.
Yeah. You should try it and report back. You're going to start a chess business. Alyssa's Three Dancing Bears chess.
You just wait.
all right. Well, that's all the time we have today for news. When we come back, we've got personal political with a panel.
Ooh.
Thank you. Welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that thinks a funnier title for Extreme Makeover Home Edition would have been Homewreckers. IRS HGTV. I think every HGTV show should be renamed Homewreckers. The Homewrecking Brothers.
They really, I mean, honestly, a lot of the homes do get wrecked.
Have you seen any of those Trading Spaces episodes where the couples come in and they hate it?
Yes.
And they can't even pretend they hate it so much.
Yes. Oh, my God. The Trading Spaces where people hate it is its own genre. Yeah. Homewreckers would be actually a good show.
A good prank show.
I think it would be
hilarious. Extreme Home Makeover messed up a lot of those houses because your house should not actually be extreme makeovered in 24 hours. Like, it should be up to code. There should be some bureaucracy to it.
Yeah, there's like plastic fires in the fireplace.
They put like a car wash in? They were like, your kid has leukemia. We're giving you a car wash. It's like, they don't want that.
It's like the equivalent of the Pimp My Rides.
Yes.
Like, that cannot be street legal.
No. I loved Exhibit doing it with my
I always thought a good crossover, like a special like April Fool's Day episode would be a crossover of Punk'd and Pimp My Ride. So like they think their ride is going to get pimped. They're a really bad person. They're selected by MTV and like Exhibit comes and is like, we're going to pimp your ride. And then Ashton Kutcher is like, ha ha, here's
just
your
kidding.
Ride. Yeah. And they have to drive like in humiliation away. So the voices you're hearing, we're going to bring in our panel because, you know, they're excited and they jumped in and they should because they're comfortable here. They're part of the family. We're going to bring in our panel. What we're going to talk about today is not extreme home makeovers, but it is home wrecking. Our first panelist.
It's a type of home makeover.
It's a type of extreme home. Extreme home makeover, I think, should be the episode title. Or extreme home wreckover. I don't know. Our first panelist is an author and the host of the podcast Noble Blood, Dana Schwartz. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
It's so good to see you. What have you been up to?
I've honestly just been up to, like, being in my writing cave, like, so bad that, like, my shoulders are having problems.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm just, like, hunched over a laptop constantly. So seeing your beautiful faces is, like, the highlight of my week.
Do you get those Instagram ads that are like, put this weird thing on your back and it'll make you sit upright?
And the Instagram ads know me because they figured out that Taylor Swift wore one of those sports bras.
She
and
did.
The Instagram ad is like, you should get the bra that will fix your posture. Taylor Swift wore it. And I'm like,
wow.
You know me. I'm every day it's ebbing away at my willpower.
Are you on the like million long list for one of those NFL jackets, like the one that Taylor Swift made or was wearing?
No, I honestly did love it and I was like very impressed and happy, but it's like A, I don't like football, and B, I live in Los Angeles. But I'm happy for everyone else who wears those
jackets.
You
could get one of like Ian's like festival t-shirts.
Yeah. That would be really cute.
Oh, yeah, you could turn it into like a kind of vest that like a fringy festival
vest.
Yeah.
That's a really good like anniversary gift. It's for him, but I'll wear it.
Okay, let's hope he doesn't listen.
No, he won't.
Rounding out the panel, a comedian and another podcast host. Listen to her show, I Love My Kid, But Wherever You Get Your Pods, Megan Gailey. Welcome back to Hysteria.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I just finished writing for the Critics' Choice Awards. And
it was so funny.
It was so,
you.
So funny, Megan.
I made direct eye contact with Oprah.
What?
Yep. I mean, and there were celebs every, you know, like, it's like we live in LA, we see celebs, but when they're all in one building.
Yeah.
But I got to park closer than Oprah. And so when I saw her, like, walking in, I'm like, she should have had my spot.
Wait, Oprah parked? She wasn't dropped off?
Well, she was, but then men were, like, walking her in. You know, she had, like, a crew. But, yeah, she just was so, like, it was, like, you would see the other celebs be like, Oprah's in the room, Oprah's in the
room. Oh, my God. I feel, I kind of love events where there's a lot of VIPs there because even though I feel like it is like the worst day of work for personal assistants everywhere because they have to navigate trying to, like, retain their celebrities' feeling of importance, but also, like, in a hyper-competitive environment where everybody thinks they're, like, the most important person there. Like, I dated a guy for a few years who was a writer and was Emmy-nominated, and when we went to the Emmys, the funniest thing, my favorite part, was everyone waiting for their limos after.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone thought they were the most important person.
Yeah.
Like, I remember seeing Jeffrey Tambor get real mad waiting for his limo. People like sitting
Wait,
on their—
Jeffrey Tambor has a temper?
Yeah. Everyone was in pretty good spirits. I did pull out right in front of Mark Ruffalo's car because I was in the best lot. Like, no one else was in my lot. Like, it did not make sense that I was— I don't know what was going on. But yeah, he was like getting into a Volvo next to me. I was like, ah!
Have you ever noticed that celebrity in LA is kind of like the royal family, where it's like there's this— everyone sort of knows the hierarchy, and you can't speak to someone if they're more famous than you. Mm-hmm. You have to wait for them to speak to you.
Yeah. Alyssa, I wonder if you saw that when you were working in government, if there were people who are like— I feel like that old saying that DC is Hollywood for ugly people. There are plenty
it
of—
is.
Yeah.
It is.
But
it is.
Did
100%.
You see, would that play out as well when you were dealing with like big events or state dinners, that there was a bunch of people?
Oh my goodness. I mean, with state dinners, it was always like— because there's protocol, there's like actual government protocol about who is like in the line of succession and therefore who gets to sit where.
Wow.
And one of the funniest things that ever happened, we were in South Korea, and the South Koreans were very strict on protocol. And so from a protocol perspective, for some reason, I outranked the national security advisor.
Wow.
And I literally had to throw myself on their mercy. I was like, you don't understand. He and I are going to have beef if you seat me ahead of him. So like, just move me back. It's fine. And she wouldn't. And so I just switched our place cards. But it's real. It's real in DC for sure.
Oh,
and there is a real, like, you know, if you're a secretary, like, who— I definitely waited for people to speak to me. I did not go charge people, be like, hey, hi, my name is Alyssa. I didn't do that.
I feel like in DC, in LA, there's a lot more like grace and finesse navigating that hierarchy.
If you're hot, it can bump
probably
you up.
Right.
That helps.
But I feel like if you could go to a party in LA and there can be like famous people there and everyone kind of knows how to go with the flow and work, there's no like record scratch, everyone staring at somebody, or somebody standing in the middle of the party waiting to be like treated like a big shot. That doesn't happen. I mean, it does happen, but the place that I've seen it happen was, oh God, in DC, I saw it happen at Steve Bannon's CPAC party in like 2015 or something
and
like
you were
that.
There. I love when
date.
We go back.
Yeah. I, you know what? We all—
you were his plus one.
We've all done things we're not proud of for our jobs.
I did.
But like Steve King was there, the famous like racist, like
bad guy,
KKK adjacent former Iowa elected official was there standing in the middle of the party acting like a big shot. And I couldn't describe the physical like mechanism, but you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Like he was standing
there.
It's
a real holding court vibe.
Yeah, acting like a big shot. And like half the people there didn't know who he was because Steve Bannon would just invite everybody he thought was interesting to
those
parties.
Yeah, and it's like you're not visually famous. You know, like your work is evil behind closed doors, but you're not on the cover of Cosmo, Steve.
Oof. Yeah, Steve King was not a great person. And like Chuck Johnson was there.
You're not even the most famous Steve King.
Yeah.
In my limited experience when I was like an entertainment journalist at EW, the people who were real nightmares were the people who weren't that famous. Because it's like the people who are A-list were like gracious to me. And like, they're like, you're doing a job, you're interviewing me, I'm doing my job. But it's like, like the CW level stars were just like, they acted like I won like a Dan and yogurt contest for meet and greet, where I'm like, no, I'm here to I'm here to do a job that I was assigned to do.
I'm helping you. Yeah. I am helping you. Let me help you. It's my job to help you. You help me, I help you. Oh, man. Yeah. Famous people. A lot of fun. Well,
they're just like us.
Congratulations, Megan.
Thank you.
It must have been kind of a nice bump to follow some of the hosting that went kind of sideways at recent award shows.
Yeah, I do think it also probably put like a lot more eyes on it, and we were very, very like aware of it, but we felt really good about what we were about to put out there. And, you know, there was a little wink in the monologue, and when that happened, the room went wild. And that was like, I honestly like kind of got choked up because I was like, writers never get called out in a positive way. And to like be one of them, it was cool.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Thank you.
Okay. So let's move on to something a little bit less celebratory and a little bit more like whatever. Ariana Grande has a new song out, and this comes kind of on the heels of several months of personal drama in Ariana Grande's life. Mm-hmm. Ariana Grande has sort of always been a public figure that has had relationship drama front and center. I think everyone here knows that that's sort of a choice on the part of a celebrity. Mm-hmm. You can't really have your personal business be out there completely against your will. That's not really possible.
You don't have to lick the donut.
You don't. But Ariana Grande's kind of tumultuous personal and dating life has been the subject of a lot of media attention for a very long time. The most recent media attention has been over her pairing with her Wicked co-star, Ethan Slater, who is a former Tony Award nominee. He once played SpongeBob SquarePants on Broadway. And the way that this becomes sort of scandalous is that both Ariana and Ethan were married when they were shooting Wicked, and then all of a sudden they both were split up from their partners, and then they were both together. And that is a good example of what we call home wrecking. Right? There's like two marriages, two homes split up. One had a one-year-old baby in it. One was a fairly recent marriage, but that ended as well. So I kind of wanted to talk about Ariana's new song, Yes And, which sort of expresses a befuddlement over the fact that people are paying attention to her love life when actually that kind of fuels her career. And then also the way that people are kind of reacting to her just publicly, she's lost like 350,000 Instagram followers.
Whoa, really?
Yeah, since the song came out.
Hit her, will it, where it hurts.
Yeah, seriously. So, I mean, Dana, your eyes lit up with a theater kid level of familiarity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what do you make of this entire situation?
I mean, just selfishly, as an individual who doesn't know anyone involved, I was just delighted by this news because it's a fun scandal.
Okay.
Like, I was aware who Ethan Slater was. Like, I knew about SpongeBob the Musical. He was in, like, Assassins off Broadway. And the fact that, like, this— like, the energy of the one straight kid in theater getting the hottest possible woman is just, like, endlessly funny to me. And so it's like, as a metaphorical tabloid reader, I was just like, yeah, celebrities should be messy. Like, they should entertain us. Like, that's fine. Because I don't know any of the people involved. I do think America as a whole is, like, a little weirdly puritanical about that type of scandal sometimes. Mm-hmm. And a little, like, hypocritical. But no, as, like, celebrities, I'm like, great, do fun, chaotic things. So that's what Ariana Grande should do, sing whistle notes and be entertaining.
And break up marriages. Alyssa, what have you made of the story and, like, the whole idea of, I mean, I don't know. Like, does it make you uncomfortable? Do you care?
No. So I had to Google because I was like, what's Ariana Grande been up to? And because the last thing I knew about her was that she had licked some donuts. And so I Googled and I was like, I mean, here's the thing. One, it's always women who are the home wreckers. Like, you know, it's always the woman who's like, she's terrible. Like, don't get me wrong. I think my real sort of like home wreckery pinnacle was Brad, Angelina, Jen Aniston. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had like the Kitson team Aniston shirt. Like, I was really invested in that particular breakup because I don't like when you humiliate the other person. Because remember back then, there was the whole W Magazine cover because Mr. and Mrs. Smith was coming out and it was Brad and Angelina pretending that they were a family. Mm-hmm. And like, I thought that was humiliating. Like, that's not nice. That's not correct. And so with Ariana Grande, I didn't care until I listened to some of the lyrics of her song. And then I was like, you're an asshole.
Oh, no, I haven't listened to the new song. Is she doing mean stuff?
She's saying, like, why do you guys care whose dick I ride? And it's like, well, because he abandoned his family.
Well, there's she also has a line in another song that's like, break up with your girlfriend.
I'm bored.
You can hit it in the morning, you know? Like, so there is, gosh, I think everything everyone has said is very true. And then when I think about them as people, which I think we are not prone to do, you go, oh, a baby? Like, that does, it is like, oh, these are people and their family is broken up. But celebrities get divorced so much. regular people get divorced so much too, but celebrities, it's like they're trading, they're swapping, they're switching tables. We almost, it's like they get divorced after 6 weeks. Like they really trade constantly, that we're so desensitized to it. But when there are sort of like other people involved and then like children, like the Good Morning America scandal was so fun.
Oh,
and
so
then,
I loved it.
And then as we got amazing. More into it, it was like they were separated. This was just, but I go, if that was my best friend whose husband did you know, like I'm fucking up his car.
Yeah. I also have to say about Ariana Grande, I do think that being famous ruins your brain. Mm-hmm. And she has been famous since she was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
I don't. This is not me trying to be condescending. I just don't think she understands, like, consequences or other people, but not because of who she— I just think the way that fame is constructed in a bubble, I'm like, I don't think that person understands that his wife exists as a person. Like, I don't think she has object permanence for other people.
Yeah, I mean, I think something that makes me a little bit uncomfortable about the whole, like, homewrecker narrative, which we see a lot in, like, celebrity culture. Also, can I just say, as you were talking about divorce, I think divorce, celebrities, like, tendency to just have multiple divorces is a form of conspicuous consumption. Divorce in California is, like, $50,000 minimum.
Yeah,
it is
expensive.
So expensive. And, like, these celebrities are getting divorces that are so fast. It's like you are paying six figures to get this taken care of.
And how much was the wedding?
Was the wedding? Exactly. It's a form of just like, wow, you might, it's like driving around a tricked out Bentley. Like that is, you have money. Like if you can get divorced several times, you've got money.
I think the homewrecker, the conversation is like why the attention goes to Ariana Grande as opposed to this man who left his newborn child.
Because he's ugly.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I mean, he's also not releasing songs. They're like, and what, bitches? Like, kind of what Ariana Grande is doing. I personally, I think maybe I have a little bit, I have a different perspective than I think like pop culture in general. But I think that like a man leaving his wife, who he's been with since they were in college, with a one-year-old baby is like unforgivably shitty behavior. I don't care if it is your hall pass celebrity crush that you've had since you were 12. Like, that is fucking shitty behavior. But the thing that does make me feel a little bit better in a spiteful and evil way is the fact that this, his ex-wife or his soon-to-be ex-wife is his only adult relationship that he's ever had. And he is walking in dick first to a meat grinder.
It's
a meat grinder.
The dumbest decision he ever could have made.
He's giving up everything for a person who has very publicly, for very long, kind of made a joke out of the fact that she ruins people's
lives. Thank you,
next.
Right.
And that men are disposable to her. I mean, that's just like, thank you, next. I mean, that is the ethos that she sort of...
Yeah. And I think, you know, we're in award season right now. And I think it's worth examining the fact that a lot of kind of the award darlings that are men right now have recently ended or broken up long-term relationships. And so why isn't, you know, Jeremy Allen White getting the same treatment that Ariana
Grande? Like at all. Like not even remotely the same. It's just like, here he is holding hands.
And I think he is getting some level of like, people, he's going, ooh, something's going on there. You know, like I also, and I hear this of like men that work as mechanics all the way up to Emmy winners. I think we just expect a lot less of men. Mm-hmm. And so we hold women to a higher standard because we go, how could they do this? Women are supposed to be the moral compass.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because, they know better.
Yes, because boys men lead with their dicks. Yeah. And so we've just written off that, like, they can't handle themselves. And, like, that's just very pervasive.
Mm-hmm. And not to get all noble blood on
please
this.
Do.
But I do think that this attitude is a remnant from like medieval European Catholic sensibility, this idea that it is incredibly important that a wife bearing an heir, that it is the legitimate heir to this line. Mm-hmm. And that is something that has like been maintained, you know, for centuries of like dynastic European rule, that it's like a man can go and like have his affairs and have illegitimate children, but it is so incredibly important to the structure of our society that a woman's children are legitimate.
I mean, tell me you don't know about genetics without telling me you don't know about genetics. There are like 1,000 genes on the X chromosome. A man determines the sex of a baby, right? He can pass on an X or a Y, so he determines the sex of the baby. If he passes on an X, he passes on 1,000 genes. If he passes on a Y, he passes on 80 genes.
Whoa!
So who is the heir, dude? It's the girl. The girl is closer to her dad genetically than a boy.
But it actually—
I did not know that.
Yep.
That's wild.
Yeah, the Y chromosome is weak, and it's going to be extinct in, like, 2 million years.
I did hear that.
Yeah.
I did hear that.
But I do think we continue on this sort of idea that it's, like, a woman cheating is this mortal, grievous sin as mm-hmm. compared to, like, a man because, you know, that can go off and proliferate however he wants. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where it's, like, actually, even in Europe, by, like, the 1800s, once a woman had an heir, people kind of looked the other way if she wanted to, like, take a lover.
I think that's nice.
Megan.
Yes!
There you go.
Oh, my gosh, I do. I have an heir. I have a Y. Man, I should have made some of those critic choice connections last.
Yeah.
You know what? There's always next award show.
But I agree. I think that's, like, but, I mean, even, like, on a personal level, when I know women that have cheated and the men in my life are like, how could they jealous! And it's like, we know men that cheat all the time, mm-hmm. truly.
And the thing is, like, the reality of it is that women sacrifice way more in the act of reproduction than men do. Like, you're giving your body up for, like, 2 years. Like,
also, in the act of being with a man, we sacrifice a lot more.
My house is so messy.
Yeah.
My house used to be so neat, and it's so messy now.
I mean, I do think that, like, men kind of get away with leaving or breaking up relationships. And part of it becomes sort of like a chicken or egg thing. Like, A, we expect less of men, but B, let's be realistic about the way that many men are raised. They're raised among these expectations. So, like, even though these expectations are bullshit and they should be held to higher expectations and they're capable of being held to higher expectations, they don't really in practice. And so, like, I think the question becomes, like, how responsible are we for other people's relationships? How responsible is a woman or a man, and is anybody, for another person's marriage? Like, if—
I actually think that someone like Ariana Grande, and again, I don't know her personally, but based on her public history and persona, who seems to take sort of, like, pleasure in breaking up institutions for power, is actually, like, a really painful symptom of, like, women who are told that their only worth is validation from men. Mm-hmm. And her trying to establish, like, superiority over other women. I think it's kind of that unfortunate attitude of, like, I'm not like other girls. Like, I'm cooler. Like, I can, quote-unquote, beat—and again, I'm projecting this on Ariana Grande. I don't mean it. But on the persona of a woman who wants to steal another woman's man, mm-hmm. I think that is— a really toxic symptom of a culture that says women's only worth is being better than other women and men wanting you more than other women.
Yeah.
It is so interesting at this point when we are, like, shameless about almost everything in society, that it does still seem to be such a scarlet letter for a woman to be labeled as someone who will, quote unquote, steal another woman's man. Like, I see it play out on Bravo all the time. It's like, there's a woman who is in jail for defrauding elderly people, and she's just, like, tweeting from jail. And then, and everyone's like, can't wait to have her back on the show. And then there's, like, a woman on Southern Charm who kissed her friend's ex. And everyone's like, we don't want to be around you ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really like, oh, we are dying on this moral hill.
Mm-hmm. At the same time, I can see, like, okay, so after Ariana and Ethan got together, Ethan's wife kind of came out guns blazing, which I think is kind of awesome. Her name is Lily, and she seems cool. But she said something to the effect of, Ariana's not a girl's girl, which I think is a very, like—
It's kind of, I would jump off a bridge if someone said that about me.
That is such an, like, you have, like, I feel like being competitive in the way that you're describing, Dana, and thinking that, like, we're all each other's sexual competition and, like, we're never supposed to work together or help each other or support each other or be interested in each other is, like, such a toxic and, like, old-fashioned, like, worldview. It just doesn't, I just feel like being the cool girl is so 2005. Like,
I was going to say, it's very Dynasty. It's very Knott's Landing.
Like, I think it's Knott's Landing.
But if someone I didn't know said I wasn't a girl's girl, I'd be like, all right. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't, like, if my best female friend said that, mm-hmm. I would be upset. But I don't, we don't know, and I'm not defending her at all. But like, as a married person and as someone who is friends with couples where I go, I don't get it. I'm never gonna get it, but it's not mine. It doesn't, like, I don't really understand other people's relationships and they don't understand mine. And it really, I lose zero sleep over it, that it's like, we don't know what Ethan is telling her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We don't know what she is telling Ethan. Like, there's all of these behind closed doors things of, like, even the Jeremy Allen White thing. You know, I heard a rumor last week that it was like, you know what, maybe actually that's not how it went down. Like, it's like, there's just so many factors and so many DMs and so many other layered relationships that it's like, yeah, if you cheat with someone's husband, they're going to call you not a girl's girl. And what's she going to do? Not write a song? No, she's going to put her high pony on, write a fucking song, and then lick all the donuts. Like, she does not care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I do think maybe when I was younger, I didn't feel like this. Like, if I were to, I feel like, first of all, Ariana Grande is in, like, me at age 23 mode, just making out with everybody.
Yeah.
And she's 30-something, I think, at this point.
But when you're famous, I think I genuinely do believe you stop developing.
At the moment you became famous.
Because you don't have to do anything for yourself. You don't have to, like, mature or, like, engage. No one tells you no. You don't have to engage with the world in a critical or like, challenging way. Mm-hmm. So I think her development stopped as soon as people started bringing her water with a straw.
Mm-hmm. We're also very, like, inclined that when a woman does something like this to make, because it's like, well, it can't just be that she does not care about other women. It must be that she is not mature. She was abused. Like, we really only almost have to give them a pass because it's incomprehensible for us to think that a woman would do this to another woman.
No, I actually think that it's both of those things. I think she is so famous that she's in a bubble that she does not care about other women.
Yeah.
Or just other people, maybe.
But I do think, like, you know, now that I'm older, and that's kind of the unfairness of, like, learning things as you age or, like, wisdom or whatever. I think now I have a perspective where when I was younger, if I was ever in a position to be with somebody who was in a relationship and not be bothered by it at the time, now I'm like, oh, God.
Seems,
like,
terrible.
Yeah, I don't want to do that to somebody else. I know that it takes two to tango and everybody is responsible for their own relationship. And I would never just say, like, Ariana broke up this marriage. No, he broke up his marriage.
She broke up her own marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. They both wrecked their own respective homes. He had more in his home to wreck than she did.
Right.
And so I hope the consequences for him are steeper. But I think that now, if for whatever reason I was in a position to make a decision around whether or not to engage with a person who was, like, coupled, I don't think I could do it. I don't think it's like, I'm not morally okay
so
with
complicated.
It.
So complicated. The logistics alone.
Who has time?
Of having a secret family? CJ can barely have our family. So it's like, there's not a chance you could have a whole other child.
I just feel like that's some really, to put a positive spin on it, that is some admirable time management.
Well, it's because they're not fathering.
Yeah,
you know, they're true. Like, hello, youngster, patting him on the head. Yeah. Here's 20
I've seen
bucks.
The Sopranos. He goes to his guma, he comes back.
Yeah, they're not doing anything. They're not, like, playing blocks with them.
Oh, man. You know what's funny? It's a guma. I'm thinking about this, like, new mob wife energy thing that people are talking about. Have you seen that?
No.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I have.
So mob wife energy. Alyssa, take it away. What is it?
It's just like all of these women who are just kind of like dressing like women in The Sopranos. It's like sequins. It's tight. The hair is big. There's like French twists.
Yeah, we're claw clipping
again. They're smoking, right? Okay.
But what's funny about this happening at the same time that we're having this like this, what, the nth, whatever, culture-wide conversation about home wrecking is that like there is a code that these like mob wives live by, which is like they're loyal to their husbands. They don't sleep with each other's husbands. They disrespect people who do sleep with their husbands. And like even though they are like straight up profiteer or like, you know, beneficiaries of crime, they are like, we still have morals. And that's the way that then that's what they follow. So
I do say like I'm kind of with Alyssa here. Like I kind of don't care about what Ariana Grande does in her personal life. And I do kind of think as a rule, America is a little too puritanical. Like I think we tolerate a lot and then we're like, but I draw the line at cheating. And you're like, all right, adults are adults and things are complicated.
Right.
But I do think it's interesting, like tracing those dynamics of why especially we have these expectations on female behavior specifically.
Totally. And, you know, I hope in the future, I don't think that it should be acceptable for anybody to blatantly like brag about causing such personal wreckage.
Gross. Like I can be like, that's not a person I would want to be friends with. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to like go to Ariana Grande's house and like petition for not for her not to be allowed to, you know,
sing
be
at
house
the VMA. It's like, dude, sing your, where are your high ponies? Do your, be a singer.
Do your thing. But, you know, we're also allowed to call things like obnoxious behavior and like antisocial behavior and like crappy behavior. And I think that's about where we stand. Okay, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty. And welcome back. Some announcements for the class before we get to Sanny Petty.
If you haven't heard yet, Pod Save America is upping their schedule to 3 episodes a week starting today. You can listen on your favorite podcast app or watch along on YouTube.
There is a lot to keep track of in a high-stakes election year: voting deadlines, volunteer shifts, emergency therapy, and maybe also your job or whatever. That's why Crooked and Vote Save America created a comprehensive 2024 planner. It's filled with important dates, motivation, and some fun extras to keep you focused, sane, and organized. For the record, we tried to include a few Xanax, but the lawyers told us no. Also, we need those for ourselves.
Start the election year off right. Head to crooked.com/store to get your planner now.
Okay, time for Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty. I'm going to go first. Alyssa had to duck out because the COVID took her.
She gave us all she could.
She gave it her all.
She wrung herself out.
She really did, and she's a hero. Mm-hmm. I think that I don't use that term loosely, and I think Alyssa is legitimately and literally a hero. Okay, so I'm going to, I don't know if this is petty or not. We were going to put this under Does This Stupid Bullshit Matter, which is part of news, but the news was running long, so I'm just kicking it down to petty. It's a little peek under the hood for you listeners. Okay, so I don't know if all of you love mess.
I do.
Personally, I love mess. Mm-hmm. There are groups on Facebook around the idea where women get together. They're private groups where women get together and talk about, they do kind of gut checks on men that they're seeing or men that they're dating. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to name it because it's against the rules of the group to like name the group, whatever.
Fight Club.
Essentially, yes. But it's a group where you can, again, married, monogamous. I have no horse in this race. I do not participate. I just peer in and I'm like, I love this mess. Because it's women saying like, I just went out with this guy. What do you think of him? And then they'll post a photo and then people will weigh in.
Say, that's like, my husband.
Who know him. Yes. Or like, he dated my friend for like 8 months and he said that he was single. You know, like, it'll be tea. And then sometimes it's like, I went on it with him on a Bumble date a few months ago and it wasn't a match, but he was really sweet and really nice. You know, like, stuff like that. So it's good and bad stuff. Sort of like the Whisper Network, but given the power of social media. Uh-huh. Right? Well, most major cities have them. You know, some major cities have more than one. Well, this is, I guess, all kind of going to shit. A man in Chicago is suing 27 women over negative reviews in a Facebook group calling him clingy and a ghoster.
27?
So. Well, suing is also pretty clingy now.
Yeah.
Like, all right, if you're trying to look chill and cool, that's not the move.
27 feels like a pretty good consensus, too. Yeah,
you got
like, that's a lot of bad reviews, sir.
That's like a competitive dance team worth of bad reviews. So basically this guy found out that he was being posted on the Chicago version of this, like,
Facebook
group.
I wonder if my sisters know him.
I guarantee one of my friends dated him.
It's public. His name is Nico D'Ambrosio. He's 32. And he says his name and photo were shared on the private Are We Dating the Same Guy Facebook page, according to the lawsuit filed in the Northern District of Illinois. He's suing 27 women, saying he's been subject to defamation, doxing, and invasion of privacy. So I just want to say, this is like part petty, part public service announcement. Careful what you write down in a private Facebook group, because it is not you texting your friend.
It's not as private as you think.
It's not as private as you think.
I'd say careful what you text your friends, too.
Voice
memos, okay?
That's true. Oh. You and Naomi are the queens of voice memos.
That's all we do.
I hate a voice memo. I'm sorry.
You just got to find someone you really connect with it on. And it's Naomi and I will send like 6-minute ones.
I can't. I need to do other things with my time.
I know.
I've got to use my ears to sense whether predators are approaching or whether or not I can safely hunt. I think this is something that we saw like early on in the Me Too movement. And I like wrote something about it and I got in trouble and feminists got mad at me. And I was like, I'm a feminist too. Don't get mad at me. I'm just pointing something out. Sorry. There was like a spreadsheet that was going around, a Google spreadsheet that was like shitty men in media. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember
anybody that. Anybody with the link could anonymously edit it. And it had some wild accusations on there. And I knew that at least one person who edited it was like a pathological liar.
Yeah, of course.
Like a pathological, like dangerous liar. You know who I'm talking about, Dana. Every few years I see that she's gotten another job and I'm like, you are all in trouble.
Yes.
This person is going to lie about and to you. Yeah. And like it's anyway, but I know that she was helping edit it and a couple guys I knew were on it. And like some of the accusations were really, really crazy. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was, you know, it's sort of like this isn't really a private whisper network anymore if it's a publicly accessible like thing that a ton of people have access to. So I just be really careful if you're trying to warn somebody about a person that they're dating, a person that they're seeing, or just a guy that they might work with. Be really careful what you write down, how you write it down. If it's possible for you to just say it to the person, that's better than just, you know, writing it down on Facebook. Anything you post on Facebook, Facebook could be subpoenaed in a lawsuit like this, and you could have your identity, even if you think you're posting anonymously, you can have your identity revealed. Just be really careful.
It's a very good PSA.
Yeah.
Like a genuinely good PSA.
Not everyone is supposed to get married or wind up together. So it's like sometimes you just date people and it's like, yeah, not for me. Mm-hmm. You know, like there is this very strange thing and it came about, and you can probably edit this out, but it was like people would be like, I dated this guy and he really sucks and like he just got this job and I don't want him to have that job. And it's like, no, that's actually not what this is for. You know, like— That's if you had a if someone was abusive to you, then like you got to let us know. If you dated someone and it didn't work out, I don't fucking care.
Right. Yeah. And also, I don't want to like downplay the fact that abuse exists and it's super underreported and people aren't believed. But like a person being mean to you is not the same as a person.
And I would argue that it is actually actively harmful to people who are being abused because it minimizes and then distorts and then muddies the water for genuine cases of abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that a combination of private, semi-private, online spaces give people an artificial sense of security and like an over-pathologization of simple romantic mismatches kind of leads to a situation where I think it was just only a matter of time before somebody got sued.
Well, it's also the difference between a public and a private person. Like, you can say kind of whatever you want about Ariana Grande and her relationship online.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, they're not real people. They're celebrities. So it's like, yeah, whatever. But it's like public people are very different.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And, you know, all you have to do
private
is—
private people, sorry.
Yeah, all you have to do is have one compliance meeting with your company's in-house First Amendment lawyer to get the shit scared out of you. You can't say shit about private citizens without, like, it possibly getting you into big trouble.
But also, Nico, if 27 women have bad reviews, maybe take this as an opportunity to do some soul searching.
Maybe take this as an opportunity to get representation, write a memoir, talk to each of the 27 women to try to fix it. This is a free idea.
One-star dater.
Yeah, exactly. 27 women or 27 bad dates. And then, like, write a book about what you learned from talking to all 27 women.
That sounds like a very good book.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
I would read that.
Yeah, you could write a fictionalized version of it, too. Because I don't think Nico is much of a writer. Just going to guess. 32-year-old Nico from Chicago. Probably not a literary guy. Don't sue me, Nico. Sorry if you are a good writer. Don't sue me. Okay. Megan.
Okay, I have a sanity. As we said, it's award season, and Monday night was the Emmys, and I'm just going to say I don't think the Emmys should be on a Monday night. That's neither here nor there. And Niecy Nash-Betts won Best Supporting Actress in a limited series, which was Dahmer, which I'm not going to watch because I don't want to be that scared. But in her acceptance speech, she thanked herself, and I loved that. And, like, the room got, exploded. And then she went on to give a name and a voice to Black women who have been murdered by police and the government. And so that was rock on too. But to thank yourself in an acceptance speech, and she doubled down afterwards. She goes, I'm the only one who knows everything that I've been through. And I believed in myself to get here. And she thanked other people. And as I said, she really like used her time and she was like, I'm going to speak truth to power till the day I die. And in the same breath, she thanked herself. And I loved it.
Very cool. Right. That is a good sanity corner. Some, like a good award speech.
Yeah.
That's enough to like warm your heart for a few days.
It is funny because Io in her Golden Globe speech thanked all of her representation's assistants, which everybody in the room, they like cut to Taylor Swift and she's nodding. But it's been funny since then. Everyone's been trying to have, they're like, and we'd like to thank the camera operator. And it's like, okay, we get it. You all see other people that aren't just famous people.
That's pretty funny. Everybody's trying to go viral now. They're yes. like, ooh, how can I get some
like,
of that?
I'd like to thank lunch.
Okay, Dana, bring us home.
Okay, this is actually a last minute swap in my mind. But the thing that actually is keeping me sane these days, because I'm working from home, I'm sort of self-employed, like I do a bunch of writing projects. The thing that I do every day that actively keeps me sane is write a to-do list.
Oh.
Mm.
Every single day.
Wow.
I swear to God, like the night before, I'll write my to-do list of like the things I have the next day and like the things I want to get done. Wow. And it like, I think without it, I would just be floating in space. If you are someone who, like, works from home or doesn't have, like, a structured job, I could not recommend. Or if you're someone with a broken brain like me, like, I cannot recommend it highly enough. It is the thing. Ian, my husband, has started doing it because he was, like, working a full-time job and now is, like, working from home. And, like, it just, like, keeps you grounded and productive and gives you, like, little tasks. It's the main thing keeping me sane these days.
Do you have like a little to-do list pad or are you writing it in your phone?
I have to write it by hand physically because
yeah. okay.
you have to cross it out. And this is the most embarrassing thing. At a bachelorette party, I got a notepad like that as like the little like giveaway. It was like uh-huh. everyone's name on
Cute.
A little notepad. And I used up that whole pad. And I got another, like, blank pad, but I didn't like it as much as the one that had my name on it. So I ordered from the exact same company that the bachelorette party had used, or, like, the bridal shower or whatever. And they only did bulk orders. I couldn't just do one. So I ordered 6 pads
wow.
with my name on it because I liked that, like, novelty gift. I was like, this is the paper that I like. It's the weight. This is the
yeah.
size I like. And so I ordered 6 custom pads just for myself.
And oh then my is God. The pen like a pink dick?
And this is also a really dorky thing that I'm almost embarrassed to admit on a recording device. I took a handwriting class last year.
What?
I remember that. You were yeah. wasn't it like calligraphy?
Well, wow. no, so it was a woman who is like the head calligrapher at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London.
What? Sure, naturally that's a job.
It's a job mm-hmm. because of course they're doing calligraphy all the time. But she does like handwriting and it's a private lesson. It was like wildly affordable. Like it sounds so bougie, like it was not expensive.
Not a wait list for that class.
No, she's like great. And it was just she and I on Zoom and she, like, helped me make a handwriting, and now I'd, like, it's really soothing and relaxing. I, like, do my to-do list. I write it out really neatly, and I feel really centered and organized.
Wow. This is why you went to Brown and I went to a state school.
That actually, you know, could you take a handwriting class? Like, let's say you were planning on doing a crime
yeah.
that required you to disguise your handwriting.
Ooh.
Would that change the way your handwriting appeared enough that a handwriting expert could not detect—
My handwriting is really different.
Okay.
I think the paper trail from this class might implicate me. But if I could have done it, if I threw away all my practice pads, mm-hmm. I could probably get away with something.
And then we scrubbed the internet of this conversation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We got to go back and make sure that it's deleted.
Cheryl at the V&A Museum and wipes me from her record.
No, you make an appearance. It's like suddenly this the movie or the whatever murder mystery starts with like a handwriting expert being murdered.
Yeah.
And then we turn.
Cheryl's dead.
Yeah, Cheryl died.
Sorry, Cheryl.
Dana did it because she was going to do a bigger crime.
With a pen.
With a pen.
Yeah. That's a really good, I feel like this is a really good, like, Lifetime.
It has Lifetime vibes. Yeah.
100%.
All right, I'll voice memo Naomi about it.
All right, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Thank you, Megan and Dana, for joining me. This was a super fun conversation. Alyssa, get well soon. And listeners, if you want to get in touch, hysteria@crooked.com. There will be more Hysteria for you next week. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okolate, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week. The government of Kenya pledged to end gender-based violence by 2026. The Ministry of Health in Uganda is trying to eradicate yellow fever. It's ambitious to make these kinds of pledges, but it is much harder to achieve these lofty goals. Are these leaders really delivering on these promises for women and girls? Tune into a new season of The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women, a podcast from Foreign Policy, as reporters across Africa meet courageous women holding leaders accountable in various sectors, including healthcare, startups, and government. Listen to The Hidden Economics of Remarkable Women wherever you get your podcasts.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.